It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. And for the rest of the program today, we're going to be talking with the jazz drummer and band leader, Micaiah McRaven. Now, I say that, jazz, but it doesn't really fully capture the kind of music that McRaven makes. In fact, I don't know that I can do any better than the description on his own website, so I'm just going to read from that. Quote, McRaven believes that the word jazz is insufficient at best to describe the phenomenon we're dealing with. The artist, who has been aptly called a cultural synthesizer, his website says, has a unique gift for collapsing space, destroying borders, and blending past, present, and future into polytextural arrangements of post-genre, jazz-rooted 21st century folk music. McRaven was born in Paris to two musicians. He moved to Massachusetts at a young age, and in the mid-2000s, he followed his wife to Chicago, where he's been based ever since. McRaven is one of the headliners at this weekend's Pygmalion Music Festival in Champaign-Urbana. He's performing at 8:30 Friday night at the Rose Bowl Tavern. I spoke with McRaven in late August, before he was about to head off on a European tour. Because of that, the rest of our show is on tape today, but you can always let us know what you thought by emailing talk@21stshow.org. Micaiah McRaven, welcome to the 21st Show. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me. My pleasure.
So you were born in Paris to musician parents, raised in Massachusetts. What was your musical upbringing like?
I just grew up in a house with a lot of music going by. Both of my parents were kind of deeply into their work and studies, and but also was kind of left on my own to kind of just do my thing, and I would kind of just find different instruments and just sit down the drums and define different ways to keep myself occupied.
I was curious about your when did you start playing drums, and if you sort of pursued the, you know, did you have to do the thing that people like me did, you know, Alfred Drum Method Book One sort of thing, organic?
My dad sat me on his lap and taught me some drums at a young age, and I got to play a lot, like, really young in that way. But also, you know, like, the school program had a band program, and I did all the kind of book work as well. But, you know, having different musicians around and a kind of a guide of what's possible with music was kind of the other thing that was really, I think, special for me. But definitely, yeah, I did all the all that same kind of stuff, and I think that stuff's important for youth.
Did you do school band then, like high school marching band or jazz band or something like that?
I went through just kind of a concert band through elementary school and middle school. And then at high school, I played in the school jazz band. But around then, really, when I entered high school, freshman and sophomore year is when I started to make relationships with other musicians there and kind of jam and start a band. And I kind of did that band thing while, you know, still doing all the music education.
So this is what, the late 90s, hip hop is king. You've said some of your peers saw jazz as this, like, old, corny, white. It was going to get you beat up. I wonder how you responded to that attitude.
That was always kind of a odd thing, because the world of musicians I came from was very different. You know, it was just him and his colleagues and just kind of seeing that world and knowing the history of the music. And so, like, you know, going into, especially once from high school, going into college, into those academic spaces, And seeing, you know, some different worlds of approaching the music. Definitely there, that kind of sentiment was odd for me, but I kind of understood, you know, where popular music was and everything. But I was wanting to find a way to do that and kind of be of my own generation at the same time.
Were there models you were looking to outside of your family of people who were doing that kind of bridging?
Well, I think less so than the musicians changing. You know, it's how the market changes and how audience changes and how listening changes and like how people are consuming media and how the critics and awards and all that kind of works. But ultimately, like, you know, I think Miles Davis was doing some stuff similar his whole career, and to Duke Ellington, I think within the kind of realm of jazz music, which is a very broad term to discuss kind of the whole phenomenon. You know, there's always been examples of musicians that have been kind of looking for ways to incorporate all the different elements of their world and their time. I mean, Miles Davis called it social music, and he was mixing hip hop and jazz from the inception of hip hop, you know, and so like, and, you know, cutting tapes and you know, so I think it's all open and available.
So you're raised in Massachusetts. What draws you to Chicago?
Well, I really moved to Chicago following my wife out here when she got her tenure position at Northwestern University. And that was, gosh, maybe 2007. And yeah, quickly just kind of immersed myself in the scene. I mean, when I first came out, I was still kind of had one foot on in the East Coast, and I would travel back and forth between Chicago and the East Coast working on different projects. And that really kind of really helped me hit the ground running here in Chicago.
Yeah, I wondered about that because Chicago is a city that in some areas, like politics, the Stagehands Union, which I have a little experience with, it doesn't always welcome outsiders. How did you break into the jazz scene there?
Well, you know, first thing I did was when I came to town, was hit a couple key jam sessions at the Velvet Lounge or the New Apartment Lounge with Vaughn Freeman. But I really, you know, when I came to Chicago, I had pretty robust career already going on the East Coast. And like I said, I was kind of started by hopping back and forth. But I really took it upon myself when I moved here that I was going to like get work and be able to like really survive and thrive as a musician and ultimately as an artist. And so I really systematically looked at the scene and found as many jams and open mics and listings and bands looking for people working, and just went to people's sets and made all sorts of lists. And really, like every day of the week, if I didn't have something to do, I was out, and quickly that turned into gigs and work, and quickly I got very, very busy here on the scene before I was you know, even being able to work my own group too much.
What's the best place to perform in Chicago? And is it different than the best place to listen?
I don't know. It really depends on what experience you're going for. I think there's all sorts of incredible spots. You know, I love kind of the underground nature of certain kind of spots where there'll be a gig that that will pop up at a spot for a weekly for a year or two. I mean, when we recorded In the Moment, we had a weekly residency at a place called The Bedford that's no longer there. And we played in a bank vault, and we just kind of put this weekly Wednesday together, and we would improvise and brought some recording gear down there, and they had a nice lounge and the food was good, the drinks were good, but it was kind of an odd place for this kind of experimental, you know, spontaneous composition music. But that was really the home of what was the record that really kind of set a lot of things off for me. And, you know, the way that goes down here is really cool. And there's just always people finding places to like make the art happen.
Let me reintroduce our conversation. If you're just joining us, we're listening to an interview I recorded late last month with the jazz drummer Micaiah McCraven. He's going to be performing as part of the Pygmalion Music Festival, a three-day music and culture festival this weekend happening in Champaign, Urbana. As we're taping, I understand you're going to be heading off to Europe. How are European audiences, to the extent you can generalize, how are they different from those in America?
Well, you know, when I first started going out to Europe, you know, the first thing that I really noted was, you know, when I was relatively breaking through in the United States and kind of like being able to maybe do some good shows in Chicago or maybe in New York City or back home in Massachusetts. But not really touring robustly. And the first time going to Europe, the infrastructure there, just there were so many people who were just out to check out new music that they didn't know who I was necessarily. They just heard I was coming and they heard this was cool and they should check it out. And so that was one of the first things I noticed, was just like starting to play and started playing some bigger rooms and more people just pretty automatically. And that was exciting, you know. But, you know, Europe is also a big, it's a continent. And, you know, depending if you're playing in London or if you're playing, you know, some small town in Germany or in somewhere in Poland or I mean, everything has its own
Yeah, I wondered. How is like a Munich audience different from a Warsaw audience, for example?
I mean, I don't know if I could give direct examples, but you know, like if you're in Berlin, you might find yourself in some cool spot that they usually do like rave parties in till, you know, the next morning, and they decided they're going to put a jazz festival on in the space this weekend. But it's something different. I mean, definitely, I think one of the big things is like, you know, one of the cool things about just the touring in general is getting to visit some of these, some of the incredible international cities around the world, you know, and they all have different vibes. And then, yeah, we also get to visit some more rural, less trodden places. And that's also exciting. And there's an appreciation for you coming as well.
Earlier today, I was listening to The Fours from your album In These Times. Was that the time signature 9/8 I'm hearing at one point in there?
And yeah.
Yeah. It's so... Why has hip hop, do you think, in particular, or American pop in general, had, you know, and yes, there are exceptions, but for the most part, it never really goes much beyond 4/4 time.
Yeah, I mean, mostly, I mean, there may be some examples in very rare occasions, and there, you know, maybe your 6/8 and your 12/8, but
all due respect to Phil Collins and Genesis. Yeah.
I don't know. I think that's just our palette. I think if you go to kind of North Africa, a lot of North African music tends to have a lot of sixes, even in their more popular musics and kind of stuff like rye music. But yeah, I don't know. You know, it has that certain kind of nod. But you know, I've always been interested in kind of exploring different types of rhythms and kind of bringing that into different spaces that I'm in, and sometimes, yeah, it can be a challenge, and there's and then it's just a creative kind of endeavor, really, for me.
All right, let me reintroduce our conversation one more time. We're listening to an interview I recorded late last month with Micaiah McCraven, the Chicago-based jazz drummer. He is going to be performing at Pygmalion this weekend, 8:30, Friday night at the Rose Bowl Tavern in Urbana. Pygmalion's a three-day culture music festival rooted in Champaign, Urbana. You can find out more information about that at our website, 21stshow.org. We're going to hear more from my interview with McCraven when we return from a break. Let's go out on the track The Fours. This is from his album In These Times. More to come after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Let's get back to my interview with the jazz drummer Micaiah McCraven. Born in Paris and raised in Massachusetts, McCraven has long made his home in Chicago. And he's performing at 8:30 Friday night at the Rose Bowl Tavern in Urbana, part of Pygmalion, the three-day music and culture festival. We're listening to a track called Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, which is from an album called A Day in the Life, Impressions of Pepper. Maybe you get the reference to a popular music act from the 1960s. I know the term band leader is kind of old-fashioned, but why aren't there more, you know, sort of frontmen, producers, for that matter, who are percussionists or drummers?
Yeah, I would beg to differ.
Please.
I would say that there's been a history of great drummer band leaders, you know?
No shade on Max or Buddy or any of those.
Jack, Blakey, you know, I mean, there's been some pretty influential, I think, drumming band leaders. I mean, even in rock music, Levon Helms and Genesis and Buddy Miles and...
But it's not a majority, right?
It's not a majority, but you know, I think often you have, you know, your trumpet players, your saxophones, your singers, obviously. But I think there's, you know, there's a lot of band leaders that are actually drummers, and And actually, but also behind the scenes, these guys. I mean, Questlove is another great good example of a contemporary drummer who has a lot of, notoriety and stardom. So, like, I think drummers make great band leaders and musical directors, just because, from the drum chair, you have a lot of power, and control over the band, and that can go either way. The drummer's not being supportive, it could be very detrimental to the music. And so having a drummer that, like, not only is going to keep all those fundamentals together, but also have be compositionally minded to all the music, I think is makes a really a powerful combination. And I encourage more drummers to do it when, if they have it. But I also think it's a unique challenge to lead from the drum set,
Yeah, because it's
because it's.
essentially, I mean, you said it. There is something like best supporting actor role about it in some way, right? It's the glue.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I don't think the glue too is, I mean, the bass player,
Sure.
BASE,
Yeah.
really glues everything together. But everybody be essentially becomes equally important. But from the drums, you can't really play the melody or the harmony. You can maybe, give a impression of it or imply it. But unless you're playing fully pitched percussion, you don't really have harmony or melody. So then, that requires some secondary instrument or compositional like study of some sort. And then I think that's, gives you a unique positionality in the music.
I did not become someone different that I did not want to be. But I'm new here. Will you show me around?
This is a track called I'm New Here. The vocals were recorded for an album by the poet Gil Scott-Heron before he died in 2011. Then, in 2020, McRaven took the album and rearranged it. Or, as the new album cover would have it, he reimagined it. A few years ago, you did a reimagining of Gil Scott-Heron's last album, I think. What drew you to Gil Scott-Heron? He was deceased by the time you took on this project.
That project, I was approached by XL Records and Richard Russell, who produced the record, which was Gil's last record before he passed. And they had already done a remix project with Jamie XX, and on the 10-year anniversary of the record, original record, they wanted to do another reimagining kind of record, and approached me to do that. And it was kind of, at first I was like, wow, this is a kind of, it was a lot, kind of a big undertaking. But I went for it, and it was very kind of cool and intense process and project for me.
I wonder what it says about a particular artist or song that it is frequently remixed. What does that say about the artist or the work?
Well, then something about it that both sonically and emotionally connects and feels like familiar again. And then once I think something is put out into the ethos and the ether, like, if once it's out there, it regenerates itself more, because we're more and more familiar with that, and that's just a comfortable sound. But, you know, something sonic about it that you know, really connects.
Your father was an expat African-American living in Paris when you were born. I wonder how that, I don't know how you would characterize it or how he would characterize it as like a time in his life or maybe even a broader sort of identity of his. How did that influence who you are in the world?
I mean, he still is. I mean, he's still living in Paris. I think that experience for me and my mother also being from Europe just kind of has given me a global kind of perspective or shaped my worldview in certain ways of wanting to travel and see more and kind of openness to the world. That's definitely influenced me kind of in the way I think about things.
10 years ago, you said, I think it was in an interview in These Times, the great Chicago sort of labor magazine, you said the dream of all jazz artists is to have enough time to think about their work and play and to develop. Where are you today on realizing that dream?
I mean, I was still trying to realize that. I mean, I feel like I have been fortunate enough to have kind of the space to kind of develop my craft, and in that kind of journey towards for looking for mastery, you know, I've got a long way to go.
How do you make time for that, though, that idea of thinking about their work? I mean, this is something that I struggle with my own role. I think a lot of people who try to do creative work encounter that. How do you make time for that? Your actual habits, right? You have a family. Do you have a lockbox for your smartphone? You deleted your social media accounts from time to time.
No, it's difficult. It's difficult. It's a challenge. I mean, I don't know if I have a solution. We all have our procrastinations and need to find the balance to maintain, you know, healthy lifestyle and relationships and responsibilities and so on. But I think, you know, it's just a grind. I mean, I'm at it every day, you know, and I think that's what I think it is. I mean, you got to be working hard and be at it every day and try to create some sort of routine and ritual. That's something I've seen from the way my father was when I was young, just the amount he practiced and it was very methodical and every day, and you know, and I feel like that kind of dedication is what it takes if you're looking to do something towards any sort of mastery of any craft or create something great.
That's so important for young people to hear that even at this accomplished phase of your career, you are still feel like you're seeking mastery. You're still practicing.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, mastery is ever so fleeting. Yeah, I think it's just a forever quest, and you know, trying to find your sound, hone your sound, develop your skills. I mean, when I was in college, I remember seeing Yusef Lateef walking through the hallways of UMass at 80 years old with everything he had done. To get an oboe lesson from the oboe instructor. And that was always a really cool thing to see.
You're going to be performing at the Rose Bowl in Urbana, part of the Pygmalion Festival. What can people expect from the show?
Oh, we're going to be playing some repertoire off of a number of my records, from my latest record, In These Times, to records In the Moment and Universal Beings. And I'm just like stoked to come out and play.
And big picture, what are you working on next?
I've got a couple different recordings in the works. Been traveling around and you know, recording. I have some recording coming up this winter, as well as some improvised kind of performances to stay on the lookout for. And also been just doing some stuff traveling around the continent of Africa and South Africa. Yeah, some music to look out for.
I feel like I buried a lead there. What's that been like traveling around Africa? Musical journey. It's such a rich continent, especially with its, the cross currents with American jazz.
It's been really cool. It's something I wanted to kind of do for a while, particularly visiting South Africa, where my name is from, and then also getting a chance to kind of stop through Ethiopia to visit a friend and do some workshopping with at the university there. But yeah, it's been really great just kind of trying to like learn a lot and make some connections and see what comes next.
Mekhi McRaven, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us.
Thank you.
Mekhi McRaven is scheduled to perform at 8:30 Friday night at the Rose Bowl Tavern in Urbana. He's part of the 3-day Pygmalion Music and Culture Festival. We leave you with Seventh String from the album In These Times. The 21st Show is produced by Anna Casey, Christine Hatfield, and Jose Zepeda. Our digital producer is Kulsum Khan. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.